Explore Territory podcast. For this episode, we invited Patrick Wolsa from Intel to the show to talk to us about his performance work around VESA and ESA, 100 gate networks, and RDMA. Hey Patrick, welcome to the show. Can you please introduce yourself and share some highlights of your career?
Hi Duncan, and thank you for the invitation. I'm cloud system architect at Intel. I'm laughing because I started my journey with IT. That was many years ago when I created a first assembler program on Commodore 64. So it was rather childish or just, you know, basic stuff, moving memory. But yeah, that was my first personal computer. And my real professional career started something like 20 years ago. I designed and implemented Edge concept. Now we are calling that SD-WAN. And that was in Pomerania district in Poland, and with virtualization in core data center. And the goal was to deliver CRM applications to a few hundred of users. Then I moved to enterprise, started my journey with one of the first private clouds in Europe. And after a few years, joined Intel R&D center in Gdańsk, and here I am.
That's very interesting because I also started out with a similar platform back in the day, although I had a Commodore 64. The first PC that I actually had, or home computer that I had, I should probably say, was an MSX, but yeah, very similar. Now, we're not going to be talking about home computers today, unfortunately. We'll be talking about VSAN performance, and specifically VSAN ESA. Now, I've read a lot of the documentation that you've created, seen a lot of the performance work that you've done at Intel. And the first document that I saw, I think, was where you were comparing an Intel CPU against an AMD CPU. And it had a very interesting outcome, in my opinion. Although it's not the topic of today, I know it's something that comes up with customers regularly. I get a question a lot for whatever reason, you know, how do you compare Intel to AMD? So maybe we can talk about those findings. Can you talk us through what you actually found when you did those tests?
Mm-hmm. That was indeed interesting test. And we are not often using competitive hardware. I'm a part of research development team. My responsibility is to optimize workloads on HCI environments for enterprise users. So I am working with you, with VMware, and many OEMs. As we know, vSphere is designed mostly for x86 architecture. So we have Intel and AMD. And I had a chance to reserve production servers based on Genoa architecture. My goal was to pick the middle SKU. In my case, that was 32 cores. There should be no surprise why 32 cores. Licensing is one element. I wanted to perfectly align with max license capacity. Okay. Now it's evolving, but when I started, that was the perfect choice. So I compared AMD Genoa to Intel Xeon 4th generation, codename Sapphire Rapid, and I found that in almost every scenario which I tested, 8K, 16K, or 32K block size, VSAN ESA performs better on Intel on similar SKUs, so 32 core versus 32 core. And at the same time, latency reduced in majority of results.
Now, just to be clear, we're talking about, from a storage perspective, also the same configuration, right? Same SSD or same NVMe. What did that look like?
Oh, yeah. The goal was to. So I have the same storage subsystem, the same networking. Obviously, different platform because baseboard platform with CPU is different. But the add-ons, so networking, storage, communication, top of rack switches, everything the same. where the difference is, when I was digging the data, I found out that there is a difference on latency. So I measured latency from application through CPU to memory, and I found out that on Intel, latency is slightly reduced. Storage workload, especially, is very latency sensitive. So any delay on storage path, I/O path, at the end, the result is that performance is lower. What else? BIOS settings. I like our platforms, and I'm saying because I'm working on them, but I can tweak almost every knob, every element, every configuration. On alpha beta versions, I can, touch thousands of different parameters. On production, we are reducing that, but still I have multiple options like prefetchers, like memory access and such things. I can give you a small hint because it's not like we know all of them, but we have a tool. It is SSVR Info, or the longer name System Health Inspector. It is on GitHub, so anyone can grab it. We are using that to estimate and to find the proper configuration, memory speed, CPU speed, bottlenecks. So the first step. And that tool help us to not only prepare infrastructure, but as well tune it to give more power and, to generate percentage over percentage of performance for specific tests. And such configuration is a template for our clients, for OEMs, and they use it in applications or internal tests.
Especially in those cases where you need to get, the absolute most out of a system, that tools like that could be very valuable. Now, of course, the other question that I probably should ask, and I know this is something that we didn't prepare, but did you also look at the cost or the price point by any chance and did any comparison around that?
It's interesting, Tavi, because our partners, they are often asking us, okay, one piece, one side is performance, the other side is TCO. TCO can has many faces, like total cost of ownership, data center, power, cooling, and so on. But we can reduce just to a fragment of costs of server licensing and something what you are controlling. And yes, indeed, we are measuring that. We are comparing our result versus price. It's for internal purposes, but as well to give sales team, marketing teams awareness where they should go, what kind of the configuration they can propose for different type of proposals. Yes, we are doing that as well.
I think this is something that comes up with customers often as well, and also something that customers tend to forget. There's a difference between a price and the total cost of ownership and the return on investment. Those are three different aspects, so it's good that you bring that up and that people actually need to figure it out for themselves as well. What is the cost of cooling? What is the cost of power? Managing the systems, etc. All of that comes into play. Now, one of the other things that you focused on a lot lately, it seems, from a performance perspective, is some of the work that you've done around OSA versus ESA, and also some of the work you've done around 100 gig NICs and RDMA specifically. Now, maybe we can start with the OSA versus ESA comparison, because this is something that I've had questions around from customers myself lately. How does it compare from a performance perspective? Maybe we can start with what you tested in terms of configuration.
Yeah, so about OSA versus ESA, probably you know all of the differences better than me, but long story short, OSA, original architecture, two tiers. ESA, enhanced architecture, so we have flat storage tier, so those two concepts. About configuration, so for me, OSA versus ESA is like modernization story. We are going from one system, one architecture, to other system. And I decided to test OSA with older generations of CPU, like second generation or third generation, plus older generation of vSphere, let's say 7.0, U2, or maybe even U3, where clients have only vSAN OSA. From CPU perspective, I tried to pick SKUs that was mostly popular at the time, when the specific generation was released. So for example, on third generation, Ice Lake. That was 24 cores or maybe 28 cores. And I compared that to 32 cores because on the fourth generation, we decided that the 32 cores will be the best choice for clients and the best cost to performance aspect. Of course, you have different elements to the in the architecture, like add-ons, SSDs, network cards. But probably we'll touch that later.
Yeah, so that makes sense. I mean, from a CPU perspective, I guess that is fair. But from a flash perspective, were those configurations also completely different, or what are we talking about in that case?
Yeah, they are, because ESA is not evolution but revolution. We had in original storage architecture two tiers. I use Optane NVMe plus read intensive drives. This is normal approach. So one Optane plus multiple SSDs could be NVMe read intensive or SATA. Depends what kind of their generation I tested. And multiple disk grips. On ESA architecture, we have single tier, single type of drive, NVMe. Just populating, starting from a minimum number of drives, and you can increase that up to a specific level. And the limitation is just a platform. Networking, the approach with OSA was 10 gig, maybe 25 with RDMA, but that wasn't common. When I started testing, I found out that moving to 100 is a game changer. That is something that brings a lot of improvement, and we were able to generate much better results.
Now, of course, most people are going to say, okay, different CPUs, different software, and then different flash, different networks. So I'm guessing the performance is going to be better. But what shocked me were the actual results itself. We're not talking about a 1x increase in performance. And maybe you can talk us through the different tests that you've done and explain what you actually saw from a latency perspective, throughput perspective, and what it actually looked like. Because I think this is going to shock most people listening.
Definitely. It's not only 1.x something or 2x improvement. It's, as I said, it's game changer. So let's start from the beginning. So definition of methodology. So we are using HCI Bench. It's common enterprise automation where different storage generators can be used. We have Storage Engine VD Bench and FIO. We move from VD Bench to FIO. FIO helps to saturate CPU to higher levels. I designed different type of profiles, and the goal was to make some simulation of specific type of workloads. So I started from a small block size, rate intensive workloads, moving to higher block sizes to simulate different type of workloads. For example, 8K, this is NoSQL, key value store, 16K, something like simulation of file and relational database, of course, with a mix of read to write percentage and randomness. 32K, it's more or less Microsoft SQL databases, and the big block size 128K. It's not often used, it's rather niche, but still, we want to catch those narrow use cases. And 128K could be video editing or video streaming. So FIO allows to configure everything and to simulate those type of workloads. And I decided to create two different approaches. First of all, to measure maximum throughput. And the other thing is to capture latency. So I created two groups, let's call it that way. And to measure throughput, I use a specific parameter. So SLA, service level agreement, and latency target. 10 milliseconds is our latency target. FIO increasing IO depth up to certain level to achieve maximum latency target, not going up, just to going to the specific level. And under such condition, performance is measured. So this is the maximum capacity of a platform. The second test is flat test. So static load, static I/O depth, and fixed configuration. Under that condition, we are measuring latency in those workloads. So we have patterns, we have scenarios, and the outcome. From third generation of Xeon to fourth generation, it's something like 3.4x. It's a lot. Moving to from second generation to fourth generation is up to 6x. It's a lot. What's interesting, and that was a really cool thing for Dell, I did a test from Broadwell generation, so very, very old architecture. So we found out that they have customers on legacy systems with vSphere 6, so end of life. And we achieved not only performance improvement, but latency, the reduction was 20x. It's like cosmic.
A lot of people listening to this will say, you know, who's still using 6.7? But if I look at the internal Slack or Google spaces that we use these days, we still see a lot of people asking questions about 6.7, being able to manage 6.7 clusters with vCenter 8.0, etc. So it does come up a lot. Now, I was reading the paper, and I think what probably stood out to me most is when you compare the number of nodes that you would have to have with OSA for the first generation Xeon compared to ESA with the fourth generation Xeon. So maybe you can talk us through that, because that really hits home.
That was really cool and creative, but creative from engineering perspective. So after first results, I received a feedback that, okay, we have performance of a cluster, four-node cluster OSA, and the same size of a cluster ESA on the newest Xeon generation. So on second generation OSA, we achieve around 200,000 of I/O operations. On ESA, more or less 2.4 million of operations. So what is the performance of one platform versus the other? Okay, what about scalability? So I arranged nodes, first generation Xeon, in our data center, and I started testing scalability. Scalability is not linear, it's not perfect. There's always some difference, you know, adding more and more nodes. I tested write one versus write five as well, because ESA, the default write policy is write five. So I wanted to have the answer for that as well. And, you know, I had up to 8 servers, so I decided to, you know, make some creative calculation. So I use exponential smoothing to predict. So I measured, I had real data, and I pick or use prediction to check scalability results of cluster with OSA and identify how big the cluster should be to meet the performance of four-node Xeon fourth generation with ESA. So one can say, okay, it's not always the performance, but as well raw capacity. 42 nodes OSA can give much higher raw capacity for application. Well, it's half true. ESA default policy is write 5 plus compression enabled. So we can reduce a number of nodes, not only because, you know, the performance, but as well, we can be very close to raw capacity with four-node cluster.
Talking about those numbers, we're talking about hugely different numbers, right, from a cluster size perspective. And we're not just talking about, you know, cost in terms of hardware, but also things like rack space, power, and cooling, and even licenses. So the difference is huge.
So there are two sides of the story, even more sides of the story. Reduction, so give a space for performance improvement. So it's not only reducing number of servers, but, you know, you are hunger, you need more power, you have more resources, you can use resources to create more applications, you have more users. So you can reduce your space, moving from, let's say, 40 servers just to 4 servers. In the same time, you're reducing space, as you said, number of racks, reducing cool power, reducing power delivered to servers. Maintenance is extremely important. You don't need to, you know, handle everything on 40 servers, just less number of servers. So let's assume that you're reducing not 40, but to 8 servers. You have twice more performance and reduction is still 10 to 1. Power, cooling, maintenance, licensing is very important. Software license, they expect a lot. It's very big cost in the total ownership of data center.
Yeah, going back from 40 servers to 8 is crazy if you think about it. And even, you know, down to 4, that's a ridiculous number. Now, there are two things that stood out when you started talking about what you've actually tested. And I actually wrote them down just in case, you know, I would forget about it. One thing you mentioned is you also compared RAID 5 versus RAID 1. Now, this is also something that comes up with customers because a lot of customers do not expect this to be the case. But did you look at RAID 1 performance of ESA versus RAID 5 performance of ESA itself?
Yes, I did. I did. That was even the first test. Oh, I did some crazy tests like using different type of drives on ESA wasn't something what was recommended or even certified, but for my curiosity. So about RAID 1 versus RAID 5, performance is on the same level. It doesn't matter what kind of the test I picked, or even sometimes RAID 5 was faster than RAID 1. It's, you know, something what we don't see quite often. That's why I understand why RAID 5 is default storage policy for ESA deployments.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Because, you know, I can tell customers all the time that I want, you know, that RAID 5 performs the same or even better than RAID 1, but no one's going to believe me. But hearing it from someone who does not work for VMware, I think is probably more important. The other thing that you mentioned is compression is enabled by default. Now, when you did the tests with OSA versus ESA, in this particular case, did OSA have compression enabled or deduplication, or did you test without that enabled?
So I did test without compression on OSA, compression reducing performance. It works differently than ESA. Compression is very close to the data where data or the I/O is created, and replication is with compressed I/O, so completely different approach. That's why compression OSA costs a lot. On ESA, the compression is just using some CPU cycles, but generally performance is on the same level. It's a beauty of the new architecture.
Yeah, it's something that I also very much appreciate. And the other thing that I think stands out is that because we actually compress it on the source, the data that's being sent over the network is also sent over the network compressed, which saves you on bandwidth. So that's also a significant benefit, in my opinion. Now, talking about bandwidth, one of the other topics which you seem to be very interested in is RDMA and 100 gig networks. In this particular case, we're actually talking about ESA. And before we talk about the numbers, maybe you can briefly talk about what RDMA is. I think most customers will understand what a 100 gig network looks like, but RDMA could be new for some of the listeners, so maybe you can talk us through that first.
Yeah, so solid data. RDMA, it's remote direct memory access. And we have two implementations, two major implementations. So RoCE V2, that means RDMA over converged Ethernet, and iWarp. Those two, you can use them on vSphere. Long story short about the technology. So the goal is to reduce path of requests from application to network devices, omitting some buffers in kernel. That means we are reducing hops, so latency at the end is reduced as well.
From a vSAN perspective, as far as I'm aware, vSAN only supports RoCE, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's true.
Now, When we talk about RDMA, one of the things that does come up with customers frequently is the complexity in terms of configuring it. I'm not sure if it's actually that complex to configure. It could also be that customers are just not familiar with the technology. But maybe you can talk us through what you had to do in the lab from a NIC perspective, from a vSphere perspective, and more, most importantly, from a switch perspective in order to get things configured for vSAN.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. When I was in company, an enterprise company working on clouds, well, there was an approach, if something is running, don't touch it, it's well now, don't break it. And I on Last Explore, I presented my results with our partner, HP, and I asked a question to the forum, who is using RDMA? The response from 150 people was around 15 persons, so something like 10%. Not much. So I had a foil about that to explain that it's not hard and hard to enable and how you can do this in four steps. Today I'm adding step zero because you are asking about what we should do on, you know, on the hardware layer top of rack switches. So the step zero or the step one, we must have specific capabilities. So first capability is DCBX, so this is Data Center Bridge Extension, IEEE, and we must enable PFC, Priority Flow Control. Just only two options. You must do this on interfaces for vSAN. I prefer to do it on all uplinks, so you can use failover when it is needed. I'm doing that on two uplinks, and I tested that on Arista, Cisco, or Cumulus. It's there. It's rather standard. So it's not something fancy. You are enabling that. It's pretty easy, straightforward. The second step, I suggest to update firmware and drivers for each network cards. Every release of firmware and every release of driver gives an extra improvements like performance and reliability. And I love using image updates, by the way, adding new drivers to the repository. The first step, check that RDMA is enabled on uplinks. You can do this from host networking section. Fourth step, it's fairly easy. If everything is done properly, you're going to vSAN, vSAN cluster and parameters, there's a section about RDMA, just single radio button, done. The fifth check, I'm doing that, it's sanity check, vSAN Skyline Health, very cool feature, check that everything is in green. If it is indeed, you're done. You have your environment up and running with RDMA.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too complex. And you know, if I listen to it, it's like the early days when we had LACP or port channels. A lot of customers weren't familiar with it. The networking team, in some cases, weren't mature enough and didn't find it too complex to set up. So they would just ignore it. And now we see most of our enterprise customers actually using it. So I suspect it will be the same with this. Now, the other thing that I probably should be pointing out is when it comes to RDMA, specifically for the NICs, there is a compatibility guide with vSAN. So if you end up procuring hardware, you're one of those customers looking into RDMA, make sure that the NICs that you end up procuring are on the list, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where the health check, indeed, as you mentioned, Skyline Health, says, hey, you know what, the NIC is not supported. So probably something that we should clearly call out. So now that we've got everything configured, maybe you can explain what you've tested. I believe you focused on throughput and latency, but maybe you can just talk us through what you've tested and focused on in this particular scenario.
Yeah, so I explained patterns and workloads. So I picked the same approach and used for RDMA tests. But here was slightly different thing because storage is the same, CPU is the same, servers, they are the same, even the same network card. What I was changing? Just bandwidth. Bandwidth on uplinks between servers and top of rack switches. My goal was to measure overall throughput, maximum performance, and indeed latency from application to the storage system. So full application latency. That was the goal.
In this particular case, I wasn't shocked because I expected you know, significant increase, but the numbers were actually, you know, significant. Maybe you could talk us through what the actual result was of the test itself. What did you see and what did you find out when RDMA was enabled?
Mm-hmm. So let's back to RDMA once again. The good thing about RDMA is that it helps to free some CPU cycles. So we are reducing the path of I/O bypassing kernel. So a CPU can focus on other tasks. On ESA architecture, it's even more important because I was able to saturate CPU to 100% to top. So any extra cycle offloaded from CPU to network cards was a cycle used by the application and storage subsystem. It's a win-win situation for me. Finally, that helped to achieve up to 90% latency reduction. It's a very big number, and increase throughput to 5.6x, just moving from 25 to 100 uplinks. Only that, no change at all. We are moving from 25 to 100. I'm constantly saying, so you have the speed on the table when you are using 25, you're losing performance, you're losing money because you already paid for hardware, paid for software. You know, for me, it's like driving a Ferrari on second gear only. Still fun because it's Ferrari, but rather slow drive.
One of the last things I probably should be asking is, based on your testing, if a customer would ask for recommendations in terms of OSA versus ESA and particular hardware configurations, 25 gigs, 100 gig NICs, etc., what would you recommend? And I know you're going to say, well, it depends. It probably depends on the budget that a customer has. But let's just say, you know, it's an average mid-size customer with 1,000 virtual machines. You've seen plenty of those. What would you recommend those customers?
So exactly, good word. It depends. In enterprise, there's no perfect path, and every customer has his own list of requirements. That's very important to understand the needs and predict outcomes. Last year, together with my team, we did dozens of thousands of tests and collected over a million of samples. It's like, you know, a long walk. I know that moving to a new technology is tricky, but migration to ESA is fast and not painful path at all. We must admit that. So in my opinion, the starting point always should be to create POC and to remember to use 100. In my opinion, that is must to have. 100 is something what I always talking. Go try it and try it without our DMA. Okay, you can use your current environment. Let's assume that you have 25. There will be improvement, but get a chance and try 100. We delivered many documents for different OEMs, so you can grab and check white papers where you can find results for different combinations and workloads. So definitely you can find something for you. About a cluster size, you can start with small cluster like 4 nodes, just 4 drives. You can increase that to a specific level because we see that ESA, performance of ESA rising when we are adding more drives. And there is a specific point of configuration when performance is rather stable on a given cluster, but you are adding more space. So you can start very low, increasing. You can find your sweet spot, what kind of the size of cluster can deliver a power for your production application, like you said, 1,000 of VMs.
Yeah, I think that's a good recommendation. Now, before we wrap it up, any famous last words or anything you would like to plug?
I love to say it, break it, fix it. Don't be afraid to touch new technology, which can give you a lot of benefits. You know, play with that. Definitely, there is a good elements in that. You know, I always constantly saying when I'm able to break something, I can learn. You know, fixing that, and try something new. Here, you know, moving to ESA, it's well-baked, it's it's a good product. I'm not saying because I'm advertising that. It's like, you know, I touch that on multiple configurations, deploy that many times, and it's working. It's a fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Patrick, for a very interesting episode.
Thanks, Duncan.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that Visa and ESA combined with the last generation Xeon CPU, 100G networking with RDMA, delivers great performance while reducing the total cost of ownership as a result of much higher consolidation ratios. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and rate the podcast wherever possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on X on @unexploredpod. Last but not least, I would like to thank Patrick for a fantastic episode.